Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Moscow, where the fugitive from the NSA, Edward Snowden, is apparently in transit on his way to Cuba, then on to Ecuador. Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer joins us to discuss Russia's role in helping Edward Snowden escape extradition to the United States and how this might affect the already frosty relations between Moscow and Washington. Then we'll speak with the chair of the United States Conference of Mayors Immigration Task Force, Raul Salinas, the mayor of Laredo, Texas, about the likely passage of an immigration reform bill in the Senate and a much less likely bill coming out of the House. We'll discuss how immigration reform will impact local government and assess the militarization of the border with Mexico, resulting from throwing extra money at so-called border security as a compromise to get conservative senators aboard the bill. Then we'll go to Hong Kong to speak with Patrick Poon, who is Executive Secretary of the Independent Chinese Pen Center, of which Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo was recently president. We will discuss China's possible role in leaning on the Hong Kong authorities to let Snowden go, a charge made by Senator Feinstein, and how much the Chinese government benefited from the leaks coming from Snowden that they have used to portray a regime that not only spies on its citizens but brutally represses them as a victim of cyber attacks as opposed to a perpetrator of them as the U.S. charges. Then finally, we'll look into the toll that the public outrage over the revelations of the NSA spying on Americans has taken on President Obama's poll numbers. Simon Rosenberg, the president and founder of the New Democratic Network, joins us to discuss the extent of irritation at the president expressed by liberal activists at the Netroots Nations gathering underway and how that might affect Democratic turnout in the 2014 elections. And joining us now from Moscow is Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who is a Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist. He previously served as a senior research officer in the Soviet Academy of Sciences. And from 1994 to 2005, he published a regular column on defense in the English-language local daily, The Moscow Times. And in 2006, after more than 6 years as an independent defense analyst, Felgenhauer joined the staff of Novaya Gazeta. Felgenhauer's regular commentary on Russia appears in many other local and international publications, and he joins us from Moscow. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer.
Hi.
So what's the local reaction to having Edward Snowden? I guess he's in transit, right, at Moscow Airport on his way to Cuba. I believe there's a flight tomorrow, Monday, to Havana that he's likely to be on. And then my understanding is that the foreign minister of Ecuador has already tweeted on his Twitter account that Edward Snowden has asked for asylum in Ecuador. So that would be his likely destination. But I guess the question for you is the one that I raised in the opening is how is this going to impact the already frosty relations between the United States and Russia?
Well, the situation with Snowden is rather bizarre. Apparently, he's in Moscow and should be legally in the transit zone in the Sheremetyevo International Airport, but no one has seen him, though there's a drove of correspondents, foreign correspondents, Russian correspondents, looking for him there, but no one has seen him. About what the fallout will be, that depends. If Moscow will be just a stopover and Snowden moves on to Latin America somewhere, some kind of more leftist regime place like Ecuador or Venezuela, that's one thing. Then this will not have much, I don't believe this will have any serious impact on the long-term Russian-American relations. If, on the other hand, he decides to stay in Moscow, and Russia has already said the press secretary of President Vladimir Putin, has said that if he wants to, Russia is ready to offer him asylum here in Moscow. That, and if he stays here, if that could have a long-term detrimental effect, an additional detrimental effect on already rather not good Russian-American relations.
But the fact that he was able to board the Aeroflot flight in Hong Kong and go to Moscow, clearly either to stay there or to continue on to Havana and then on to Ecuador, is that in itself? I mean, clearly, if Senator Feinstein is expressing irritation with the Chinese for what she considers allowing Snowden to leave Hong Kong, then I'm sure there's going to be some irritation expressed by U.S. authorities to the Russians about giving Snowden an exit.
No, actually, it's, of course, the Chinese authorities and the Hong Kong authorities that decide who boards the plane and passes passport control. Russia here is just sort of providing a vehicle for him to fly. So, as I say, Russia is just a stopover. Moscow is just a stopover for Snowden before moving further on to Latin America. I don't see in itself that this will really hamper much relations. Actually, Putin, our president, has commented about the whole thing. He does not express any outrage. Actually, he said that eavesdropping on what people say or write emails is normal, and most likely for a former KGB officer, that's actually real normal practice. Well, he said, I mean, if it's there was a court decision made, and if it's legal, then it's legal. And apparently there was some kind of secret court decision. So, I mean, and he said, giggling, I mean, Putin, that this is kind of normal procedure. We knew that that's happening anyway. So I don't think that that the Russian authorities will be experiencing any serious moral problems with Americans doing what they're doing anyway. Although, of course, this can be used, the whole situation will be surely used by Russian and propaganda, I mean, the English language, like Russia Today propaganda, aimed at the West. But inside Russia, for the Russian authorities, there's not a big deal. Though maybe most likely they'll be interested in debriefing Snowden. I mean, a very serious security debriefing could have been seen as advantageous. So if he decides to stay, I'm sure he will be welcome in Moscow and he will get a real long and serious debriefing. If he does not, well, then he does not. I don't think that Moscow is going to be trying to keep him forcefully.
Well, if he's already in Moscow, the intelligence people would have access to him. He's apparently carrying a lot of important secrets on these little thumb drives that he secreted out. Already we've seen that he's got a presidential finding from President Obama targeting countries for cyber attacks, which, of course, was highly embarrassing to Obama on the eve of his meeting with the Chinese president. So what's to stop Russian intelligence officials from debriefing him at the airport and getting all of these American secrets?
Well, possibly, yes, but such real debriefings take months. I mean,
what about downloading the thumb drives?
Debriefing, I mean, a real third debriefing takes a lot of time because it's not just simply some kind of intercepted documents or something that can just simply be moved to from one drive to another. It's it's the nuances of the operational modes of the American electronic intelligence that the Russians would be interested in. And that requires a very thorough debriefing. It can't be done just overnight in an airport.
Well, but downloading what's on the thumb drives would be incredibly valuable to Russian.
Well, for that, you don't have to come to Moscow.
That's true.
But a debriefing on the mode of operation, that will take more time.
I understand. But
I believe that the Russians would be glad to see that. But of course, when and if Snowden arrives at his final destination, I believe that some of the Latin American countries, the Russians could approach him for a more thorough debriefing.
Well, that's true, but I was just thinking from the point of view of the Americans, who are obviously very upset. I'm talking about the American intelligence people, who are very upset by this. They have to assume that all of the information that Snowden has already been compromised and is either in Chinese hands or in Russian hands. That would be the assumption of the counterintelligence people, would it not?
Oh, surely. But I mean, the problem, the most interesting thing is not the information post factum, but the mode of operational approach by the American intelligence. That would be much more interesting because it can give a snapshot of the future.
Sure.
Well, that's what the intelligence people in Moscow would be most interested in, and of course the Chinese.
And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who is a Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist. He previously served as a senior research officer in the Soviet Academy of Scientists. And from 1994 to 2005, Felgenhauer published a regular column on defense in the English-language local daily, The Moscow Times. And in 2006, after more than 6 years as an independent defense analyst, Felgenhauer joined the staff of Novaya Gazeta. Felgenhauer's regular commentary on Russia appears in many other local and international publications. And we're speaking to him from Moscow, where the fugitive from the National Security Agency is waiting in transit, Edward Snowden, apparently for a flight tomorrow, Monday, to Havana, Cuba, and then on to Ecuador, at least according to the tweet or from the Twitter account of Ecuador's foreign minister, that the WikiLeaks people who are accompanying Edward Snowden have asked for asylum in Ecuador. Now, there's one flight out of a week out of Havana to Ecuador on Friday. So I guess we'll find out. And he may, as you pointed out, he may go to Venezuela as well. Although my understanding, I called people down in Venezuela earlier today, and Venezuela is trying to improve its relations with the United States at the moment. So I guess that's less likely, Pavel Felgenhauer. But what, for example, let me ask you a hypothetical. If President Obama called up President Putin on the phone and said to him, look, we want you to arrest this guy who's at Moscow airport, what would Putin do?
Actually, the Russian authorities put out unofficial statement saying they can't do anything because he didn't officially cross the Russian border, because he didn't go through passport control, because he doesn't have a Russian visa, actually. And so he's outside of our jurisdiction, and we can't do anything.
I see.
And so I don't think that anyone's going to do anything, and a phone call from Obama won't help at all.
So in effect, there's no Russian complicity in this. I mean, if the guy...
Well, there could be, but right now Russia is trying to apparently be a bit at hand's length. As the Chinese have been, I mean,
sure. Yeah,
he could have gone to Beijing, but he hasn't. And Hong Kong as a kind of separate legal entity. The Russians say he didn't cross the Russian border. We can't do anything. Of course, there's no extradition treaty between Moscow and Washington anyway. And the state of the Russian-American relations is so frosty, there's zero possibility of any kind of extradition, and there's no actual legal procedure to proceed with such extradition.
But you did mention
I don't think there's right now no way for the American authorities to put their hands on Snowden.
But you did mention earlier that there had been a kind of something like an offer from Russia that Snowden might be welcome.
Oh yes, the Kremlin said that if he wants political asylum, we will consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, well, not that much legally speaking, because any person in the world can ask for Russian political asylum, and we will consider it.
Right. So while I have you on the line, we've spoken before, of course, about more important matters than defector or a whistleblower, as he's called by some people. There is, of course, some serious negotiations went on at the G8 conference between President Obama and Vladimir Putin, which atmospherics in the press described as extremely cool, with President Putin looking at the ground quite a lot, not making eye contact and not smiling very much. And President Obama apparently tried to make a few jokes and they didn't go down very well. I think President Putin said something like, I see the president is trying to humor me, or something along those lines. So do you think there's any possibility that the U.S. and Russia, this deal that Kerry and Lavrov, who apparently have a pretty good relationship, have tried to put together, this conference over the future of Syria in Geneva?
Well, there is some kind of a bit, at least, of coinciding of interest on Syria, in the sense that the conflict in Syria and around Syria, it's not just simply a Cold War proxy classical conflict. There are other forces involved. There's the Iran, there's Hezbollah, there are the Sunni regimes, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. I mean, this is this Syrian conflict is transforming into a kind of showdown between Shias in the bigger Middle East, led by Iran, and Sunni forces, and this involves a lot of different things, and bombs exploding in Baghdad and whatever. And Moscow and Washington see themselves kind of being dragged into this situation. And not everyone in Moscow or in Washington at all are very happy of being dragged increasingly into this Shia-Sunni growing sectarian war. And would maybe want to at least put some kind of stop on it, maybe find a diplomatic solution to defuse the situation, not to be dragged, soaked in. And this so-called Geneva II conference in, that could find a political solution, well, there is a desire in Moscow and Washington to find such a diplomatic solution. The problem is, right now, it doesn't seem that there's enough common ground to find it. And the kind of dragging in of both former superpowers, or at least the United States is maybe most likely still a superpower, into this malaise between Shias and Sunnis in the bigger Middle East, I'm afraid is going to continue. And all about Putin not smiling, you know, Russians don't smile. Russians are not Americans.
Well, I think occasionally Russians cracks a smile, don't they, surely?
Well, I mean, they don't smile normally. I mean, looking at another person just for the sake of it.
Right, right.
If a Russian smiles, I mean, there should be some kind of reason, or he'll believe to be a kind of nitwit.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who's a Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist. He previously served as a senior research officer in the Soviet Academy of Sciences. And from 1994 to 2005, Felgenhauer published a regular column on defense in the English language local daily, The Moscow Times. And in 2006, after more than 6 years as an independent defense analyst, Felgenhauer joined the staff of Novaya Gazeta. Felgenhauer's regular commentary on Russia appears in many other local and international publications, and he joined us from Moscow. I'm afraid we've run out of time today for the interview with the mayor of Laredo, Texas, on the immigration bill, which looks like it's going to pass the Senate. Its fate in the House is quite uncertain, but we will obviously do more coverage on it later. We're going to now go to Hong Kong after this break.
us back in the USSR. Well, the delivery girls really knocked me out.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Hong Kong is Patrick Poon, who's the Executive Secretary and Board Member of the Independent Chinese Pen Center, of which Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo was previously president. Patrick's a former journalist and an activist in Hong Kong. He's currently studying for his PhD in law at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and his research is about legal and extra-legal control of internet activism in China. Welcome to Background Briefing, Patrick Poon.
Thank you.
And clearly, Patrick, the Hong Kong authorities, I think it looks as though they were quite relieved, if not anxious, to get rid of Snowden. Edward Snowden, who's now in Russia, apparently waiting for a flight on Monday to Havana. And then from Havana, it's likely that he'll go to Venezuela or Ecuador. The Hong Kong authorities said that Snowden left through a lawful and normal channel. The U.S. are disputing that in as much as they say they had asked for his extradition, and then the Hong Kong authorities had asked for more paperwork, if you will, and in the midst of that, the Hong Kong let Snowden go. So the U.S. are kind of annoyed with the Hong Kong authorities. It's pretty obvious. What's your understanding of the process was underway in terms of Snowden's extradition?
Well, from my understanding of the Hong Kong government's press release, as well as the legal experts here in Hong Kong, well, actually, we would say like this time, we think actually the Hong Kong government has done nothing wrong in the process because, it's legitimate for them to ask for, more paperwork and more documents before they go into the process of doing the extradition. So that is something that within the requirements of Hong Kong law to do so. So I think for us, although we always criticize the Hong Kong government of being, very weak in handling, issues related to freedom of expression, and we have been very worried about like whether they would have sent Snowden back to the U.S. because we think, actually, myself also think like although we think Snowden has been, releasing something like would be considered really national secret note. But I think at the same time, we also see reports about U.S. People's concern about whether their emails, their communications would be monitored by NSA. So after considering all this kind of information, I think it's really, kind of worrying for us to see whether how the U.S. government would handle Snowden's case if he would be extradited to U.S. So, but of course, for the legal process, I do agree with all the legal experts and also the government's position that they actually are entitled to ask for more documents and additional information from the U.S. before they can do the extradition. So because there's no other information, no sufficient information to do the process, so there's no legal basis that they can stop Snowden from leaving Hong Kong today.
Well, they also, apparently the Hong Kong government, also formally asked the United States government for clarification on reports that computer systems in Hong Kong had been hacked by U.S. agencies, and that information came from Edward Snowden in an interview that he did last week with the South China Morning Post. And that interview has been played widely in the Chinese press, who now, China is now calling itself a victim of cyber attacks instead of a perpetrator, which the U.S. had been previously accused of. So there's some speculation in the U.S. that Snowden might have been working for Chinese intelligence all along, given that his choice was to leave for Hong Kong. Do you have any evidence, and that the assumption is that he'd made a deal to go to Hong Kong, what evidence do you have or do you know of, Patrick Poon, in Hong Kong that Snowden has been visited by Chinese intelligence?
Well, I have no evidence, and also we haven't heard of any evidence that he was approached by Chinese intelligence in Hong Kong. But concerning like the accused hacking of the system, actually it is actually the hacking of the system of which the university I'm attached to, so the Chinese University of Hong Kong. But the university already said last week that they couldn't find any signs of hacking in the system. And also they we also heard some internet experts' opinions in Hong Kong that because the server and the equipment at Chinese University of Hong Kong is actually also kind of holding the data, not just for the Hong Kong society, but also actually includes some information related to other parts of Asia, also including China. But of course, we don't know, you know, how technically the things can be done, like through the hacking to the computer system at Chinese U, because there's some technology experts. They also explain that even though, like, maybe the Chinese university didn't notice there's the kind of any signs of hacking. But they, the way they check it was only like whether they have someone hacked into the system and got information from their server or data. But actually, they also said that they can actually have hackers who can just go to inside the system and then just have a look of the information without taking anything. So we are not very sure about like whether actually this kind of hacking happened or not. But anyway, my position is that we have no evidence to prove, although we are also kind of worried, you know, whether Snowden had any, you know, communication or anything to do with the Chinese government. Of course, he himself denied, but we can't prove it now. And of course, my research is about internet activism control in China. I do really realize how serious internet surveillance is happening in China all the time. But we don't have evidence for the moment to see how or whether Snowden has got the information what the Chinese government think would be something that they want, or whether they think actually the information Snowden has leaked has, you know, anything to do, you know, with anything happening in China. But my opinion is that I think even if Snowden has got, you know, information about U.S. government agencies hacking China's system, I think because for the Chinese government, they have already a lot of experts. They are also hacking experts. They also know how and whether, you know, the U.S. government has anything to do with hacking of the system, because they may be doing something as well. They've been hacking the U.S. government system as well. And that is happening, like we also heard a lot of reports about, like, hacking between, you know, the two government computer systems. So I'm not surprised even, you know, there would be, you know, if the case, if really the case that Snowden has got information about, like, whether, you know, hacking of the China Chinese government system from the, you know, the NSA data. So that's my opinion.
So, but tell me then, in terms of China's relationship with Hong Kong, where there's a certain amount of autonomy, particularly with the legal system in Hong Kong, but my understanding is that the Chinese intelligence authorities have pretty free rein over Hong Kong. I mean, what's your understanding in terms of both Chinese military and the Chinese intelligence services monitoring the activities in Hong Kong and having total access?
Well, we have, a very big building at, the central government liaison office here in Hong Kong. We in Hong Kong have no idea how many staff and how many officials are there in the huge building. So there have been rumors that something like they have already built something like a government structure similar to the Hong Kong government structure and the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party structure inside the building. So in Hong Kong, it's almost like an open secret that we know that we are kind of under surveillance, but we are still kind of like not experiencing the kind of surveillance that mainland Chinese people are facing in mainland China. So we have no cases like people who have been, sending emails or browsing websites or having like online checks that they would be arrested or, harassed for the moment. But we do have a lot of hacking. Like my own email account, I always find a lot of spam mails and really suspicious with mainland Chinese characters with also a very strange, sensitive topics. And it happens very often, almost like on a daily basis. So we here in Hong Kong actually suspect that we have our, a lot of internet surveillance by the Chinese intelligence targeted on people like me who are working on comparatively politically sensitive issues. Although we have not been, facing the kind of difficulties like people are facing in mainland China.
So tell me, Patrick Poon, we saw some demonstrations in Hong Kong in favor of Snowden and wanting to give him asylum there in Hong Kong, and clearly the Hong Kong authorities dodged that bullet by allowing him to fly on to Moscow. What is your understanding, and you're with the Penn Center, the independent Chinese Penn Center in Hong Kong, which, of course, is an organization protecting the human rights of writers around the world, and writers and thinkers are always on the front line of in the crosshairs of despots in every country, whether they are potential despots or actual despots in control. So give us a sense of what the local reaction to this temporary visit that you had from this American fugitive from the National Security Agency.
Well, I also joined the protest to support Mrs. Snowden last Sunday. But the reason is that actually we think this is actually universal value for protection of people's freedom of communication. So although we understand the U.S. government's concern about the terrorist attack happened, 9/11, and because of that, a lot of measures have been put up to control and also to monitor whether there would be any further terrorist attacks. And also we are very sorry about what happened in Boston. So we think the U.S. government's concern about national security because of this potential terrorist attack is legitimate. But the problem is that how they do it, the line has to be balanced, how they view the monitoring of some people or some individuals they think would be suspected to be related to terrorist activity. But also at the same time, why they still haven't, handled very properly about how ordinary people's communication, their emails, their contacts, and their telephone conversations, why? A lot of big questions there, why they also still haven't done properly to to handle it properly without really intruding people's privacy and their right to communication. So that is the big concern that we have. And we think what Snowden was doing is actually just to show the world the concern about the intrusion of privacy and the right to communication when a government is claiming to, to prevent terrorist activities. So such excuse needs further explanation from the U.S. government, because they can't just claim that because they need to prevent and monitor terrorist activities and then give up or to intrude its people's freedom to communication and privacy.
Well, just in closing, Patrick Poon, since you are in Hong Kong and the shadow of mainland China is there, and as you were telling us, the activities of Chinese intelligence and the military are present but not clear, but you yourself are concerned about your own communications being monitored. It seems to me that so far, a lot of the information that we've got here in the United States from Edward Snowden is not particularly new, but it's certainly created a tremendous anger amongst the public. They seem to have woken up and are very concerned about government monitoring of citizens' privacy here in the United States. But surely, compared to what goes on in China, it's the difference between night and day. That's my understanding. I think it's pretty obvious. So far, it seems that Snowden has helped the Chinese enormously on the eve of the meeting with President Obama and President Xi. That's when the story first came out, and a lot of information came out indicating that the U.S. had targeted other countries. And as you know, the Chinese press picked up the South China Morning Post interview with Snowden and played it enormously. The People's Daily has been running editorials saying that maybe we should take in Edward Snowden. He's become something of a hero. And now China is saying that they are the victims of cyber attacks, not the perpetrators. So in the overall scheme of things, it looks on balance that Edward Snowden has helped the Chinese.
I understand it's really kind of like very complicated and very political. So I don't know like whether, it's really related, but it seems to be legitimate to have this speculation as well, because it's really the timing is so coincident, like when the news was released and broke out, and then the President Xi and also President Obama met. So it's really whether, is it because of this consideration of timing that they, Snowden broke out the news? I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but it seems to be, the China Daily and also the Chinese government really grabs the chance to really to attack the U.S. government because Chinese government has been notorious of controlling its citizens' internet freedom and other ways of rights to communication. But of course, this time we would, have a very strong polemic attack on the U.S. government now because of Snowden's release of the information that they can claim that while the U.S. government is hacking, always been criticizing Chinese government's controlling freedom of expression in China and freedom of communication in China, and claiming the U.S. been also hacking Chinese government systems. So it's kind of like becoming like two countries' diplomatic crisis, because for the U.S. government, it's really under attack by the Chinese government because of its hypocrisy of criticizing Chinese government of hacking. But at the same time, they're doing the same, according to the information. So I would say it becomes really too complicated that I have no inside information, but my only interpretation would be that we can't avoid that. It would be something like what Snowden want to grasp the chance of like the meeting of the two state heads as a way of breaking the information and so that he can try to continue to put more pressure on the U.S. government to face the issue of freedom of expression, freedom of communication, and also monitoring of U.S. citizens' privacy. So that's something maybe his tactics to do so. I think from all the information and all the news and all the available information we have seen, so I do think that maybe he was saying that it would be the best time for him to do so. But I'm not sure whether he has given, you know, more information to the Chinese government or really giving more ammunition to the Chinese government to attack the U.S. Because after all, China is still very notorious for its own control of the internet in China, as well as its control of free flow of information in China. So even though they attack U.S., they can't claim that they don't have problem in China.
Well, Patrick Poon, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ian. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Patrick Poon, who's in Hong Kong. He's the executive secretary and board member of the Independent Chinese Pen Center, of which Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo was previously president. Patrick's a former journalist and an activist in Hong Kong. He's currently studying for his PhD in law at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and his research is about legal and extra-legal control of internet activism in China. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back looking into how the Snowden story appears to have affected Obama's poll numbers, which have dropped 17% amongst those under 30.
That you find a pretty face can hide an evil mind. Oh, be careful what you say, or you will give yourself away. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret Asian man, secret.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Simon Rosenberg, who's the president and founder of the New Democratic Network, a leading progressive think tank and advocacy organization. Previously, he was a writer and producer at ABC News for 5 years before working on the Dukakis and Clinton presidential campaigns, where he was a member of the 1992 Clinton War Room. Welcome to Background Briefing, Simon Rosenberg.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Ian.
And, of course, there's been – we've spent the morning – we went to Moscow first and then to Hong Kong following Edward Snowden, who appears to be on his way to – on Monday to Havana and then on to Ecuador, where WikiLeaks spokesperson, who are both accompanying him, he's being escorted by diplomats and legal advisors from WikiLeaks. He's bound for the Republic of Ecuador, where their foreign minister, Ricardo Patino Arroca, tweeted that the government of Ecuador has received an asylum request from Edward J. Snowden. So in terms of, for example, what's happening now at the Netroots Nation in San Jose, where thousands of liberal activists and bloggers are gathered. They booed Nancy Pelosi yesterday for defending the president in terms of the NSA leaks. How is this going to impact, do you think, if liberal activists who are already somewhat disappointed in President Obama? How do you think this might affect Democratic turnout in 2014?
Well, I would be surprised that if something like this was a major driver of turnout. There are so many other issues in front of us as a country, the economy, healthcare, immigration reform, Syria, and so on, that I think this will be a peripheral issue in voting, but it won't be a peripheral issue in sort of the chattering classes. I know there's been some data showing that Obama's dropped a little bit with some younger voters. We'll see if that sustains. We don't know. I mean, it could have been a blip. It could have been an immediate reaction. We'll see. But my gut is that this is not a game changer for the president or for the Democrats.
And the drop in the polls is a recent CNN poll that had the president's rating dropping 8 points in a month to 45%. But within that poll, it said that his support amongst those under 30 had dropped 17 points in a month. That's quite a drop.
It is, and I think it reflects that part of the population is probably more sensitive to the kind of issues that we're discussing right now, which is the this balance between open societies, closed societies, and privacy and security, and I think that they're probably a little bit more up to speed, quick to make conclusions, and probably a little bit disappointed with what they heard in the early days of this debate. But I think we're in a second or third stage now. I think we're starting to learn more about what's going on. And I think that, the president has got, I think the overarching necessity for the president now is just like what he's doing in Syria. I mean, he has to explain to the American people in a very aggressive way what he's doing. I mean, it's their money, it's their government. He needs to explain why these choices have been made, what it is that we're doing, what have we gained, what have we lost, and I think the country is, despite the fact I'm not a big fan of Edward Snowden, there is no question we're having a healthier debate about these matters today than we were a few months ago.
And what explains, though, the apparent outrage that a lot of citizens feel, both on the left and the right, but as we've been talking, particularly amongst young supporters of the president, this suddenly has taken hold. Now, the story basically broke back in 2005 with the New York Times. So there's not a lot new about what Snowden is bringing to the table and the extent to which, as he said, he considered a terminal and tap the president's emails or phones, et cetera, if he had an email address. That's been disputed. But what explains, at least to you, why it is that this has taken hold so much in the public consciousness?
There is a little bit of a Casablanca feeling here, right? I mean, that we're shocked that all this is going on. I mean, I think if you read the polls as well, most Americans just assumed this was all happening. I mean, an overwhelming majority of Americans assumed the government was doing this, and I think that some of it was that it was not well known recently. I mean, and the fact that this president, who had been a constitutional professor and had continued, very aggressive practices. But let's just be clear, though. I just want to, because I know we don't have a lot of time, is that I think part of what we're heading towards is there's going to have to be a discussion about domestic norms and international norms, and that part of the lesson of what the Snowden fiasco, if you want to call it that, has shown to us in recent days is that there are bad international actors at work here. I mean, a lot of the effort by Glenn Greenwald and Snowden has been to push, the light on what's happening by the United States. But we know that Russia and China and Iran and other actors who do not have a strong history of democracy and political freedom in their countries have been belligerents in the cyber world, and that this part of the discussion about international norms and about new belligerents and this using these new tools to infiltrate our country, which has been going on at sort of extraordinary rates, we've lost all of that in this discussion. And I think Snowden's bouncing around now to some of the worst governments in the world and clearly showing that he's anything but a patriot in the last few days is going to help put the other part of this conversation on the table that needs to be there, which is the international dimension, which has been obscured to a great degree by what's happened in the last few days.
And again, I'm speaking with Simon Rosenberg, the president and founder of the New Democratic Network, a leading progressive think tank and advocacy organization. Previously was a writer and producer at ABC News for 5 years before working on the Dukakis and Clinton presidential campaigns, where he was a member of the 1992 Clinton War Room. So given, let me just quote from the Netroots Nation gathering underway in San Jose, where 3,000 liberal activists and bloggers are gathering, and where I mentioned yesterday Nancy Pelosi was booed for defending the president over the NSA story. Adam Green, the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, said, when he proposed, talking about Obama, when he proposes cutting Social Security benefits, does nothing on jobs, does nothing on holding Wall Street accountable, and now is spying on every American, that's not something he can ask people who wanted hope and change to rally around. There are many who spent so much time in 2008 and 2012 to elect this Democratic president, and this is not what we bargained for. So, again, I know I've asked you this question before, but it seems to me that unless the Democrats break the tradition, the spell, if you will, on midterm elections, and they got routed in 2010. If they don't take, if they don't control the House, and even perhaps even take back the House and hold on to the Senate, nothing's going to get done for at least 2 years. I mean, gridlock seems to be the real issue in America.
Well, as somebody who works a lot on the immigration issue, I'm feeling that a lot in the last few days. So, I don't disagree with your major premise. I'm just saying that I think over time, I don't think and first of all, obviously, Adam, who I know, you know, this idea that the president is spying on every American, I think everyone who's involved in this conversation has an obligation to get this right. And that's an exaggeration, right? I mean, I think we could sort of debate this for the rest of the afternoon, but the president's been very clear that the focus of of what we do, what the NSA does, and the NSA has been around a long time, and our spying on foreign powers has been going on for a very long time. It's the nature of what spying is, right? Is that we have to be a little bit careful not to exaggerate, like Snowden has been doing, frankly, his own capacities that it's been widely disputed that many of the things that he said were just untrue about what he could do sitting at a desk, particularly when he was not an actual analyst, right? He was an information technology guy in Hawaii and not an actual intel analyst. And some of what Snowden said seems to have been to sell the Guardian newspapers and not actually bring enlightenment to this process. And so I just want to say that I think, this is my opinion, I could be wrong, that a year from now, you know, this is not going to be a central part of the conversation that the Democrats are trying to have with the American people. We're going to be talking about how we've improved the economy and how we've brought universal health care to the United States and passed immigration reform and brought, you know, change, positive change to the Middle East. There's going to be a lot of other things that are frankly going to be more front of mind for the Democrats. But your admonition, the Democrats have to be worried to make sure their base is motivated. I mean, the president's about to announce a major climate change initiative on Tuesday, which I think will be galvanizing for many in the Democratic Party and the left, seen as long overdue, right? Mm-hmm. Is that I think there's going to be plenty that's more top of mind that's going to be driving the agenda. I think the Democrats will have enough to go to the American people with. At the same time, on this issue, you know, we need to have this conversation. And I think that, you know, I think what's happened in today in particular with Snowden has been, again, another step in us moving from what has been a slightly naive conversation, I would argue, about the nature of the way these things work in the world to a more, you know, complete one. To me, if you're one of the conclusions I have from what I've watched today is that it sure looks like Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian got played, you know, pretty heavily in this whole thing. By whom? Whether it was Snowden, whether Snowden was working for foreign powers, whether at what point he seemed to be working for foreign powers, this whole thing just doesn't, there's a lot of complexity to this now that is going to be, I think, an important part of this story going forward, and I'm glad we're going to have shows like this to talk about it.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes then, Simon Rosenberg, since you worked as a member of the 1992 Clinton War Room, I've often wondered why Obama doesn't have a war room and why, for example, framing of these big issues that he faces with this extraordinary and unprecedented obstruction coming from the Republicans, particularly the filibuster in the House of Federal Judges and his appointees. The Democrats frame that, fixing that problem as the nuclear option, which is completely brain dead because it's not an an apocalyptic option, it to go back to business as normal. The Republic has operated for 200 years on they're returning to normal. So they framed that very, very poorly. And when you say that immigration reform might help the president, I think it's going to help the Republicans more, isn't it? I mean, in a curious way, the best hope the Democrats have is that the House destroys the Senate immigration bill, and we have more obstruction, and then that's how you get the rascals out, because they are the do nothing, know nothing Congress.
It's a great question, and I think there are times when all of us wish the administration was a little bit more aggressive about both framing, to use your term, the issues, and also fighting hard. To win, it's my belief, having been in this business for too long now, for over 20 years, that in order to win of the politics, you got to win the argument. And I think that too often, our party isn't focused enough on winning the argument against the other side. I mean, I could spend hours, a long time talking about on immigration right now. This most recent, I think on immigration, look, if this passes, both sides are going to get credit, but at the end of the day, the Latino community is going to know who fought for them and who fought against them. And I think that in net-net, I believe what Bill Clinton always said, which is the best politics is good governing, and I think this is a big problem, and we'll have, gone a long way to solving it. And I think that's why we're here. I think at the end of the day, people come to Washington not to have food fights on the Senate floor, but to actually try to make people's lives better. There hasn't been enough of that in recent years, and I think this is a rare opportunity for us to do something really important and meaningful for the whole country, not just for Latino undocumented immigrants. But I think your bigger point is an important one, and we are in a pitched battle against a tough other side, and sometimes I feel like they're bringing more powerful weapons to the arguments than we are, even though their arguments for the most part aren't so good. And I think we're going to have to, as we shift into in this immigration debate, I think, for example, we're going to see, there's a new wrinkle in this, and I've written about this a lot and gotten quoted quite a bit this weekend about this new effort to have 20,000, double the number of Border Patrol. I mean, this was a bad development in this debate, and it's going to make this bill, which I think was pretty good, it's going to make it a lot worse, and it's going to make it harder for Democrats to defend, and I'm nervous about how this is going to play out on your point, right? Is that are we going to get an immigration bill that at the end of the day is something we can defend and be proud of? And if we don't, it's going to be hard for us to take credit for something we're not happy with.
Well, Simon Rosenberg, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Sure. Good luck with everything. Thanks, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Simon Rosenberg, the president and founder of the New Democrat Network, a leading progressive think tank and advocacy organization. Previously, he was a writer and producer at ABC News for 5 years before working on the Dukakis and Clinton presidential campaigns, where he was a member of the 1992 Clinton War Room. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.